Hello, I'm Dora Walsh, and I've been working in the field of nutritional and functional medicine for over 14 years. I'm a qualified nutritional therapist, and I support my clients to overcome their chronic health concerns like obesity, digestive problems, chronic fatigue, autoimmune conditions, skin concerns, gut health, and more. You can find out more about me on the internet and also follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Well, this week we're going to be talking about Alzheimer's and whether Alzheimer's could be preventable. Maybe you have a family member, maybe a parent or a friend that's recently been diagnosed, and you're concerned about what could happen to you. Maybe you have the genetic risk factor. Maybe you don't know where to go for help. In this show, we're going to be talking about the steps you can take potentially to prevent Alzheimer's disease and understand a bit more about what the underlying causes could be. Now, before we go on to talk to our amazing guest today, let's talk a bit about Alzheimer's. Now, Alzheimer's is a brain disorder that slowly destroys memory and thinking skills, and eventually the ability to carry out the simplest tasks. It's the most common type of dementia. It's a progressive disease which begins with mild memory loss and possibly leading to loss of the ability to carry on a conversation and even respond to the environment. Alzheimer's disease involves the part of the brain that controls thoughts, memory, and language. It's really important to know that every day in the UK alone, around 800 people are diagnosed with dementia. And as a conservative estimate, about twice as many develop mild cognitive impairment, the precursor of dementia. The most common form of dementia is Alzheimer's disease, accounting for 2 in 3 dementia cases. And they say it's irreversible and it develops slowly over many years. According to the Food for the Brain Foundation, half of the risk of developing Alzheimer's is preventable. Only 1 in 100 cases are caused by genes. So why today are so many people suffering from the disease? Well, this week, I've got Patrick Holford on the show. He's a famous nutritionist and the author of over 40 books, as well as the founder of Food for the Brain Foundation. And you can find out more about that foundation on foodforthebrain.org. Welcome to the show, Patrick.
Good morning, Dora.
It's great to have you here again. We always like to get the top experts on the show. This week, we're going to be talking about whether Alzheimer's is preventable. And I came across a lot of work that you're doing in this area and also the Food for the Brain Foundation, foodforthebrain.org. So I was very keen to get you on the show to talk about your thoughts and your research on whether Alzheimer's can be preventable and also to understand the risk factors of Alzheimer's and then developing a roadmap for what people can do to prevent it developing, where they can get help, and also what kind of research do you have to back up these claims that Alzheimer's is preventable?
Okay, well, first of all, I think you can realistically cut your risk if you start reasonably young, let's say from age 40 or 50, doing the right things. You can probably cut your risk by 70 to 80%. It's in that order. And the recent discoveries, which are very important, in two areas. For example, one study that just came out showed that someone's blood sugar level at the age of 35 predicts their risk for Alzheimer's. In other words, it's happening, very early. Also, we know that basically the difference when you start to lose your memory and you do a proper cognitive function test, it can diagnose you with either dementia or pre-dementia, which is mild cognitive impairment, as you said. And you can only really diagnose Alzheimer's by doing a scan of the medial temporal lobe, the central area of the brain. Now, those changes in that area, now we're really talking about density, loss of matter, they occur up to 40 years before a diagnosis. So what's clear now is from around the age of 40, you can start to pick up risk. What we've been doing at Food for the Brain Foundation, first of all, several years ago, we developed the first ever digital, free, online, and validated cognitive function test. Anyone can do it. Yesterday, over 100 people did it. We've tested 380,000 people. And we actually did some research at UCL, University College London, and with the NHS, which showed that 88% find this process helpful. You not only, it's not a questionnaire, it's an actual sort of interactive test. I can't tell you too much to disclose it, but it's something you need to set aside 15 minutes. You can't do it on a phone. You have to do it on something, at least iPad or computer, and do the test. But also, what we've now added from earlier this year is a questionnaire, which is called the Dementia Risk Index Questionnaire. And this assesses a person's risk over eight domains, because there are eight kind of ways of organizing risk. And we know this from lots of meta-analyses, systematic reviews. So one of the members of our scientific advisory board is Professor Jintai Yu from Fudan University in Shanghai. And he looked at almost 400 studies, 152 randomized controlled trials to look at what are, there's two questions here. Number one, what are the risk factors? And number two, what are the risk factors that we can modify? This is very important. Head injury, for example, is a risk factor, but you can't change it. If you have the head injury, you've had the head injury. And on the basis of this, we built the Dementia Risk Index questionnaire, which will give you a score out of 100%. If you score 100%, you're doing everything wrong that would increase your risk. And if you score 0%, you're doing everything right. Now, the areas of risk relate to B vitamins. I want to talk about B vitamins and something called homocysteine, omega-3 and seafood. That's a second. These two collectively, according to the National Institute of Health, accounted for 44% of the risk of Alzheimer's. I think that's a slight over-exaggeration, but they're very big. The third is sugar, and we call it low carbs and low GL. So we know, for example, people with diabetes have a much higher risk. The fourth is antioxidants and polyphenols. Think of that as fruit and veg. The fifth is a healthy gut. The sixth is having an active body. The seventh is having an active mind, both good social life, learning new things, and so on. And the eighth we call sleep and calm. It's the effect of getting enough sleep and also reducing stress. And what happens is on our website, which is foodforthebrain.org, which is where you can go and do the test, in relation to the evidence, if you click on individuals as opposed to organizations and you go down to the Alzheimer's prevention section, you can click on a manifesto. This is our manifesto for change, for making Alzheimer's happen as a preventable disease. And in there, you will see all the evidence fully referenced for each of these eight domains, each of which, by the way, has an expert. So we have Professor David Smith from Oxford is the B vitamin expert. We have Professor Jeremy Spencer from the University of Reading. He's the antioxidant expert. We have Professor Robert Lustig from the University of California, and so on. So take the time to read the manifesto, because then, and why this is important is that people don't do this test because they think there's nothing that they can do about it. They think it's in the genes, it runs in the family. So they'd rather just bury their head in the sand. And this is really one of the most preventable diseases. It's not a natural, inevitable consequence of aging. And if you like, it's the end of the same sort of process that leads to weight gain, diabetes, heart disease, cancer, even arthritis, and finally Alzheimer's. And we know that this does not need to happen.
And it's so good that you're putting the information out there. But a lot of people, as you say, they don't do the test because they think nothing can be done. And then they're going to go towards irrevocable decline because they don't have this information to support their different body systems.
So yes.
Let's talk about some of the steps, if that's okay with you.
Certainly.
Where should they start?
Well, I think the point is that when you do the cognitive function test online, it then shows you how you score on each of these eight domains. It's very simple. It's on a traffic light system. So if you do badly, you score red. And if you do well, you score green. And what we're launching in November is an app called Cognition, which will then take you through a series of communications and processes of things to read, things to watch, things to do, things to report, groups to join, Zoom, Facebook, etc., to change your scores. But I would like to highlight two, because for some strange reason, which we can't quite fathom, is if you go to the NIH, National Institute of Health in the US, they attribute the two biggest risk factors that we can change, that have shown disease-modifying effect if changed, are lowering something called homocysteine with B vitamins and omega-3. If you go to China, literally the best possible study to date, you will see that the single greatest modifiable risk factor is lowering homocysteine with B vitamins. If you go to the UK, it's called the Livingstone Report or the Lancet Commission, which is in many respects very, very good. He just completely ignored the two biggest factors, B vitamins and omegas. Now, what happens is in your, I mean, we're really talking about protecting your brain cells, and your brain cells have a membrane or a skin, if you like, through which all the messages pass. And those membranes or skin are actually made 95% of the structural fat of the membrane of your brain cells is made from omega-3 DHA. DHA omega-3 is what you get in oily fish. You get very, very little conversion of the type of omega-3 in flax or chia seeds or walnuts actually into DHA. But the DHA has to bind to something called a phospholipid, which is very rich in eggs and fish. And the binding is done by a process called methylation, which depends on B vitamins. And if you're not able to do methylation, then the level of something called homocysteine goes up in your blood. Now, what we already know from the genius research back in 2010 from Professor David Smith, the Emeritus Professor of Pharmacology, former Vice Dean of Oxford Medical School, is that in placebo-controlled trials, is if you give the B vitamins to people with pre-dementia, you will get a shrinkage, a reduction in the rate of brain shrinkage of 53% and virtually no further memory loss. But then he discovered something which is really the hottest news, and that is that he went back to the original blood samples and he found to measure omega-3. And he found that in the third in the study who had the lowest omega-3s, the B vitamins did nothing. They didn't work. But in the third with the highest omega-3, they had not 53% less shrinkage, but 73% less shrinkage, ninefold less shrinkage of the Alzheimer's area of the brain, no further memory loss, and 60% on the B vitamins, this is the people with sufficient omega, had a clinical dementia rating at the end of the year of zero. This is an 18-point scale that, in effect, would say whether or not a doctor would diagnose you with dementia. So 60% really are no longer diagnosable with dementia if given homocysteine-lowering B vitamins and sufficient in omega-3. And that is an amazing discovery.
How long would they need to do this in order to get that clinical breakthrough? Was it a year that they did this?
Well, yes, that was measuring over a year. But there are two things that are really important here to say. For those of you who've heard, rather outrageous headlines about new drugs for Alzheimer's, let's just put this into context. The reduction, this latest drug called lecanemab, reduced the cognitive dementia rating on an 18-point scale by 0.45 points, e.g. less than half a point on an 18-point scale. The previous drug, which was really got a lot of press because it was partially approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, despite 9 out of 10 of the experts in the FDA voting against it, many resigned in protest. And that reduced this clinical dementia rating by 0.39%, 0.39 points, so less than half a point, but wasn't statistically significant. So the name of the game, if you're a drug company, you've got lots of money, and you really have a very ineffective drug, is you increase the number of people on the trial so you can just see a little bit of statistical significance. Now, on an omega-3 study, on its own, just giving omega-3, that's already been shown to reduce this 18-point scale by 1.5 points. In other words, more than three times more effective than the, quote, best drug. But as Professor David Smith's study showed, 60% of the participants after a year, and most of these drug trials, by the way, are a year or a year and a half, by 60% got to a clinical dementia rating of zero. So it doesn't matter which way you look at it. It's very, very obvious that even just targeting B vitamins or omega-3, you get a rate of measurable effect that is just light years ahead. And what's happened recently, because other scientists have looked at the synergy, if you like, the the collaborative effect of B vitamins and omega-3. One big study called BeProof, which had shown marginal benefit of B vitamins, went back, looked at their original blood samples, again, split them into highest and lowest omega-3, and found the same thing. Wow, the B vitamins really work, provided you have enough omegas. Another big study called OmegaAd in Sweden, which had given a decent dose, 2 grams, think of it like 2 fish oil capsules of omega-3, and really found marginal benefit, went back and in this time looked at the homocysteine level at the start of the trial in their participants, which is the measure of B vitamin need, really, and found those with a low homocysteine, which means sufficient B vitamins, had a massive effect from the omega-3. And then a study in China, which had given either a B vitamin or omega-3 DHA, found that what really worked, and the only thing that really worked, was the combination of both. So it's, you know, I can mention 3 other studies that have found the same thing. It's a bit like if you give a builder a bag of nails, do you get a house? No. Give them a hammer, do you get a house? No. Give them a bag of nails and a hammer, you get a house. And it's sort of, you know, it's not a difficult concept to understand, especially when you know that neurons, brain cells, have to have both sufficient Bs and sufficient omega-3. And by the way, probably the most important B vitamin in this context is vitamin B12. And what happens and is that I think 2 in 5 people over age 60 will have insufficient B12 in their bloodstream, despite often having completely apparently sufficient B12, which comes from meat, eggs, milk, fish, any animal produce, in their diet. And the problem is, the older you get, the less well you absorb B12. And if you're on a drug like omeprazole, an antacid drug, I mean, that just kills B12 absorption. If you're diabetic, you're on metformin, that messes up B12 absorption. If you've got high blood pressure and you're on a diuretic, that messes up B12 absorption. If you consume a lot of coffee, that also has a similar effect. If you consume a lot of alcohol, that has a similar effect. So it's not just a matter of whether you eat a well-balanced diet. The amount of B12 that we actually need to lower homocysteine in somebody who has a raised level, and by the way, half of everyone over 60 has a raised level of homocysteine. The amount we need is 500 micrograms. The RDA, which I call the ridiculous dietary arbitrary, is 2 micrograms. So when you're not absorbing so well later in life, and you have no way of knowing whether you are or aren't, then you need much, much higher dose to bring the homocysteine down, get methylation working, to be able to attach the omega-3s to make new neurons. So you can have all the omega-3 in the world and a lack of effective B vitamins won't work. You can have all the B vitamins in the world and a beautiful homocysteine level, which ideally would be 7 above 11.5. You have accelerated brain shrinkage. Won't do anything if you don't have the omegas. You've got to have both.
You said that a lot of people these days over the age of 60, maybe they're not absorbing their B12 as well. It could be to do with coffee, to do with medications, and therefore they need to supplement. With the omega supplement with B12 or on the other B vitamins, I know they all work together. But with the omegas, should they have more oily fish or should they be supplementing omegas? Could they get enough from the fish?
Well, I think in this studies, they found with a third with the highest omega-3 had the best result, but that doesn't prove that those third were necessarily at an optimal level. What I do, I supplement omega-3 every day, and I eat oily fish, and we're talking here salmon, mackerel, sardines, trout, taramus salata, by the way, is very good as well, fish roe. I have at least 3, maybe 4, sometimes 5 times a week. Now, I want to sort of, I'm actually broadcasting to you today from Wales, where I live. And I want to put this into context, because if someone asks me, why do we need to supplement? Can't you get all the nutrients you need from your diet? I will tell you that the simple reason we need to supplement is because we're not eating anything like enough food. The point here, let me tell you the story of a Paviland man. This was an ancient Homo sapiens remains found in the Gower Peninsula off Wales some years ago, 40, 45,000-year-old Homo sapiens. And the usual story is they'd be wandering across the plains, catching antelope, et cetera. But when they analyzed the bones of Paviland Man, it turned out that almost a quarter of their diet was from marine food, seafood. So first of all, understand that our ancestors, up until we had cars and fridges, basically were expending probably three times, at least double the calories that we do today, because they have to chop the wood and fetch the water and catch dinner and all the rest of it. So they ate a lot more food. All the food was whole. All the food was organic. And so what you understand is that if we're eating at least half of the calories that Paviland Man was eating, and almost a quarter of their diet was seafood, we would, and by the way, seafood is not only rich in omega-3, it's very rich in B12, it's very rich in phospholipids, which is what the omega-3 has to attach to. If we wanted to get the same intake of those nutrients from food, literally half our entire diet, literally half of everything you eat in a day would have to be from marine food. So I am convinced that just eating oily fish three times a week is not going to give you an optimal intake of omega-3. It may be enough to prevent Alzheimer's. We don't yet know, but it's probably not optimal. So I veer towards, modeling, if you like, what our ancestors will have consumed. So every day I take an omega-3 supplement and I also eat oily fish. Now, of course, if you're vegan, you've got a real problem here. Number one, you don't want the fish oils. And number two, you don't want the fish. But you can get vegan DHA derived from algae. And a vegans basically have to supplement both B12 and omega-3 and also phospholipids, which, by the way, are very rich in lecithin, which you can get in capsules or granules.
So good you've said this because there are many new vegans out there today. We're not criticizing because everyone has to make their choice, but we have to be realistic about the amount of nutrition you can get from a vegan diet, and it's not going to really provide those levels of nutrients that you can from having fish or other animal products. So good that you've mentioned that. But I always wondered whether the omegas from the algae are as good as from the fish.
Well, I think that they're not as good as from total fish, but they probably are as good as fish oil. You see, the thing is that, well, the only problem with the vegan omega-3 is it doesn't give EPA, it just gives DHA. Now, DHA is what's needed for the brain, so that's fine. EPA has some other roles to play in relation to mood and inflammation, reducing inflammation. So I'd still favor fish oil over just algal-derived DHA. In fish itself, you've got the DHA bound to the phospholipid. It's called phosphorylated DHA. So fish DHA or marine food DHA is the best. But in fish oils, you've just got the DHA and you leave it to your brain to do the binding. But I do think that the algal DHA will be as good as fish oil. So I wouldn't really worry too much there. I wrote a book. I mean, again, like you say, everyone has a choice. I call myself a pegan. So a pegan is a fish-eating vegan with pagan tendencies. But I think even, I mean, I've worked quite closely with the scientists at the Vegan Society, and their very good analysis of surveys shows consistently that the healthiest people are those who eat a largely plant-based diet with seafood. So I think that's the healthy way to go. But I wrote a book called Optimum Nutrition for Vegans, like you say, because if someone does choose to be completely vegan, they are going to have to supplement not only DHA and B12, but also phospholipids. There's a tiny bit of these phospholipids in almonds and broccoli, but not enough. And we are going to find in the next few years that one of the critical phospholipids called phosphatidylcholine, choline is probably going to end up with a recommended daily allowance. It's one of the factors that we know predicts problems in pregnancy and brain development in the baby. And I want to really emphasize this because basically, one of our advisors, wonderful man, Professor Michael Crawford, who runs the Institute of Brain Chemistry and works at the Chelsea and Westminster Hospital, has found that when a woman, a pregnant woman, doesn't have enough omega-3 DHA to effectively build their baby's brain, they start to make another kind of fat, not so different to what's in olive oil, a type of oleic acid, which is literally used as a filler in the brain of the fetus because there isn't enough DHA. And so by measuring the blood level of this substitute, this poor substitute, they can predict which women are going to have babies with cognitive and brain defects. So I think it's important to understand that in truth, we will probably find that some of the risk for dementia and Alzheimer's can actually be set in pregnancy, you know, as early as that. And really, these diseases that hit us have very, very similar causes. It's the difference is just if it hits your joints, you call it arthritis. If it hits your heart, you call it heart disease. If it hits your blood sugar balance, you call it diabetes. And if it hits your brain, you know, we call it dementia. But I mean, I've my teachers, wonderful men like the late Dr. Linus Pauling, who had two unshared Nobel Prizes, 48 PhDs, you know, and Dr. Abram Hoffer, a genius professor of psychiatry in Canada. You know, they died well into their 90s, absolutely alert. I think one of the terrible things that's happened in our industrial age culture is retirement. Because where I'm starting to get to is that you not only need the right structure in your brain. In other words, you need omega-3s and you need methylation and you need phospholipids and so on. You've got to have the right fuel. And what happens is the more sugar you consume, the more the insulin receptors shut down. So you're not getting good fuel to the brain. And we know that high sugar is a real problem for the brain. There's another whole conversation to be had about ketones and the importance of eating more fat, less carbs, which is another brain fuel. But also, you've got to, it's a little bit like, you know, you put your car in for a service, you've got to have the right parts, you've got to have the right fuel, but then you've got to drive the thing. And we drive our neuronal network with exercise. I mean, if you're doing dancing or, you know, if you have to balance, I was just out this morning fixing something in a treehouse and all the rest of it. That's a whole lot of, you know, instructions to my brain to work and make connections. If you have rich, you know, social life and you're bantering with your friends and talking about new stuff in the news and films and so on, that's really working your neural network. If you, you know, do Wordle in the morning or a crossword or learn a new language or take up learning a musical instrument, etc., that is working your neural network as well. And we have a wonderful professor, Tommy Wood, from the University of Washington, who's really one of the leaders in this, in the need to put demand on your brain. So if you have a breakdown in structure because no omega-3s and no B vitamins, and a breakdown in fuel supply because you're eating too many, you know, carbs, for example, and you have a lack of neuronal exercise, basically cognitive exercise for your brain, then you're just going ahead in this direction of Alzheimer's and dementia. And
I'm so glad you're talking about this. We'll be right back to talk a lot more about how to prevent Alzheimer's with Patrick Holford after a few messages from our commercial partners.
Radio. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 Regenex clinics worldwide where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Dora Walsh on UK Health Radio, your global feel-good radio. We're here this week talking about whether Alzheimer's is preventable and what you can do with famous nutritionist Patrick Holford, author of over 40 books and founder of Food for the Brain Foundation. You can find out more about them on foodforthebrain.org. Now, Patrick, you were just before the break, you were telling me how important it is for people to get their omegas, their B vitamins, to put the demand on the brain in terms of using their brain, socializing, working, maybe not retiring too soon and keeping on going until later in life, and also providing your brain with the right fuel. These are amazing steps. What other steps can people take to prevent Alzheimer's? Because I know at the beginning of the show, we talked about a number of different areas like gut health, antioxidants, polyphenols, etc.
Yes. Eating a lot of fruit, veg, herbs, spices, blueberries. I just had blueberries for breakfast. All these antioxidants are important because the brain is generating lots of energy and it basically makes exhaust fumes. So things like smoking, for example, definitely increases, risk of Alzheimer's. So upping your antioxidants and reducing your oxidants, not having a lot of deep fried food, that kind of thing really makes a difference. The healthy gut area is very new. We have reasons to believe that, what goes on in your gut is clearly affecting your brain in one way or another. We don't really have the clinical trials yet. One surprising area for some people is the impact of dental health. So people who have gum disease, for example, have a much greater risk of dementia as well. So now we have, gut-related problems. I already mentioned the lack of stomach acid as being very, very common driver of low B12 levels. And that causes all sorts of problems, bloating, heartburn, and so on. So any clue of a digestive problem is also a very important thing to take into account. But the important point is that if you do the cognitive function test and you fill in the questionnaire that comes with it, and by the way, it's not www.foodforthebrain. I'm not quite sure what happens these days. Just put in
food. They've got rid of those. Sorry.
They have. Absolutely. It's just foodforthebrain.org. Exactly. If you go there, you can really see what your risk is, which is fantastic. And in November, we're just finishing off building this amazing app called Cognition, which is going to cost £5 a month or £50 a year. And that is really going to show you what to do. But the important point is that we want hundreds of thousands of people to join us online by testing themselves and becoming, if you like, citizen scientists. We've tested 380,000 people. That's a lot of people. We're going to introduce home test blood tests for things like homocysteine or the blood sugar marker, HbA1c, or vitamin D, which I haven't mentioned. Vitamin D is also very important. There's lots of evidence that your level of vitamin D, if it's good, will reduce your risk, and omega-3. So what we want is we hope by the end of next year to have 1 million people joining us as citizen scientists, taking the test, finding out what are their weak areas, making changes. Then every 6 months you redo the test. And I want to emphasize here that this, our charity is a tiny, tiny charity. It has no, big funders. It has no commercial interests. And we've literally spent close to £250,000 since 2010 researching and building the cognitive function test and the questionnaire, and now this new app that's about to come out. We are short of money. We've literally done it from people becoming a friend of Food for the Brain, which costs £50 a year or £5 a month. And the friends of Food for the Brain get lots of benefits, including they will have access to the Cognition app when it comes out next year. And literally, it is those few thousand people who are going to participate. See, here's the big problem. At University College London, they've started a trial called Apple Tree, which, again, if you are potentially at risk you can join, and they're going to encourage you to eat a Mediterranean diet and to exercise and to use your mind, and everything is really good. They don't seem to have anything on the B vitamins or omegas, because you know this is just excluded in the UK, which is really crazy, because those are the things that really change. But the point is, this is a placebo-controlled trial they're doing. They've got a control group. It's not placebo, but they've got a control group doing nothing. And probably it's got to run for a number of years to have any effect. And in a number of years, there'll be a very nice study, which, like so many studies, will probably be largely ignored. And, you know, life goes on. And what we are trying to do is get hundreds of thousands of people proactively involved, making changes, measuring them, telling everyone they know over 40 or 50 to get involved, sharing the research at every step of the way, so we can learn in a real-time situation. And I think that the days of waiting for that randomized controlled trial, which is a sort of perfect, you know, little microcosm of a world that you create to do something important, like showing that the B vitamins work, is all very well and good, but what we really need is action. And today I was reading the Metro, and Line of Duty Star said in there, dementia is the UK's biggest killer. That's not bullshit. That's a fact. This is her saying it. There's no cure. It's almost a forgotten disease. Now, our line of duty is to do everything we can, both to not get dementia ourselves, but also to persuade our family and friends to take action to prevent it. And this small effort is so worth it when you consider not only the suffering of someone with dementia, but the whole burden it puts on their family. The cost is enormous. Last year in America, more than 11 million Americans provided unpaid care for people with Alzheimer's or dementia. This was 16 billion hours of care, valued at $272 billion. Here in the UK, we've got almost a million people with dementia. And on this basis, there's £22 billion worth of carers' costs not accounted for. And that is why we have to take charge of our own health, start making changes now, because once you've got holes in your brain, there's nothing you can do about it.
It's a shocking statistic. It relates back to what I was reading in one of your reports, because there is no drug treatment. We cannot rely on, oh, if you get Alzheimer's, there's going to be a treatment, because it was former WHO director Margaret Chan that says, in terms of drug cure or even a treatment that can modify this disease, we are empty-handed. So therefore, the onus is on us, as you said, to take responsibility for our health, to focus on all of those risk factors. The healthier we are, the less chance we have of developing this disease, and making sure we get those nutrients in, the B vitamins, the omegas, and to make that part of our daily life. And it is an effort, actually. Nutrition and eating well and health and all of that is a big effort, but it pays off in the end, because we don't end up suffering from those terrible degenerative diseases.
Yeah, and I think the important point here also is that there never will, in my opinion, be a drug, because when we understand that what drives this is this combination of factors, including using, you know, using your mind, whether it's through exercise or whatever, it's you know, you can't develop a drug that does all that. It's just not going to happen. And I showed you earlier that we spoke about Professor David Smith's research, which had 73% less brain shrinkage. Now, the best amyloid-lowering drugs have produced 2% less brain shrinkage with no clinical dementia benefit, or very, very little. So, you know, that just shows you the chalk and cheese of this situation. But when you've been in this field as long as I have, you know that if there is a B vitamin pill or omega pill that you could take that is many times more effective than, you know, the best drug, then you know it's going to be suppressed because of money. You cannot make significant money out of a non-patentable, naturally occurring nutrient. And it's a tragedy that it is really to do with the, you know, the economics of that, that this critical information is effectively being suppressed or ignored when the evidence is without doubt in its favor.
Have you managed to speak to the NHS about this in any way?
Well, yes, but there isn't like a single person, you know, to talk to in the NHS. And as I said, a lot of reports. I mean, I read a lovely piece in the Telegraph by a nice man, Samuel Gray, who was professor of public health at University of Oxford. And he was, in a sense, saying a lot of the same things that we're saying about exercising, eating a good diet, and how we have to take charge of it ourselves. But, of course, the article completely ignored omega-3 and B vitamins. And the reason went back to this Livingston report, the Lancet Commission, which completely ignores that factor. And actually, this is an ongoing sort of UK assessment. And with every version of it, Professor David Smith and others have sent the author the evidence in relation to B vitamins and now omega-3, and it has been ignored. So we are contacting anyone in the system, so to speak, who continues to have this absolute blind spot about B vitamins and omega-3, because they are right up there as the strongest and easiest to change risk factors. They're not the only risk factors. We should exercise. We should use our mind. We do want to eat more fruit and veg, definitely control blood sugar levels. But I strongly suspect that even if you do all those things, if you've got a raised homocysteine level, it's not going to help. I met one man and he said he felt brain dead. He was 60 years old, and he said he kept losing his car in the multi-story car park. He had no energy. He had really bad memory. And I tested him and his homocysteine was over 100. It should be, really below 10, let's say, certainly below 11. And I gave him the homocysteine lowering B vitamins, which you can buy. I mean, the health food stores, most supplement companies have a homocysteine lowering B vitamin formula. And 6 months later, his homocysteine level had dropped to 9. And he said, I have never had as sharp a memory ever in my life as I have now. So it's really not too late, even at age 60 or 70, to do something about it. And I think, I mean, one of my sort of goals for this year, and certainly by the end of next year, is this blood test for homocysteine, which should be as easily available as cholesterol, because every single NHS hospital lab can measure homocysteine. Every single GP could request it. And it's, I mean, we got the health economists at Oxford University to look at what the saving would be if doctors simply sent people to our website, foodforthebrain.org, test the cognitive function, if not good, measure the homocysteine, if above 11, give them the B vitamin. So it's a terribly simple prevention strategy. And we are talking in the order of a saving over 5 years across the EU of about 65 billion euros.
We'll talk a lot more about this issue after a few messages from our commercial partners.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 Regenex clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
The listening to Dora Walsh on UK Health Radio on my weekly show, Nutrition for Health, Perfect Weight and Wellbeing, talking to Patrick Holford this week about preventing Alzheimer's. He's the head founding person for foodforthebrain.org and author of over 14 books. So we were talking about the importance of omega-3s and the B vitamins. This seems to be the overriding theme of today. This is so crucial for people to understand, as well as understanding the homocysteine level, keeping active, having a healthy diet. Let's just go back to the dosages. You've mentioned 500 micrograms is the best dose for B12. What about the omega? What should people be supplementing with?
Well, first of all, just backing up on the B vitamins, not everyone needs 500 micrograms of B12. In these studies, they were giving 500 micrograms of B12, usually 800 micrograms of folic acid or folate, which is very important, and usually 20 milligrams of B6. But I don't take that. I take 10 microgram of B12, which is already five times the RDA. Why? Because my homocysteine level is good. So we shouldn't, I mean, it's not dangerous. All that happens, you waste some money. We don't all need to be supplementing 500 micrograms of B12. It's really what you need if your homocysteine is high. In terms of the omegas, I think what you want to be shooting for is getting at least 500 milligram of DHA. And that's going to take one or two omega-3 capsules a day. If it's a high-strength omega-3, it's one. I happen to take one called Essential Omegas, which is both omega-3, DHA, and EPA, and also a little bit of the most powerful omega-6, which is called GLA. So as a consequence, it's not quite so concentrated in just DHA, and I take that twice a day. So about, if you're getting 500 milligrams of DHA, so look at the label, look at how much you're getting, and that's the kind of level that you need to get.
It's so important that you share this, because when people are buying fish oil capsules, and myself included, before I trained in nutrition, you just buy the capsule, you're just assuming it's got the right stuff in it, but you really look at the amounts of the DHA, because that's what's going to make the difference. And some of them have got very low amounts, haven't they?
Well, they have. And there's one other thing worth mentioning, because, you know, some people already, maybe, you know, relatives, you know, are having less good brain function already. Neurons, brain cells, can run on either glucose, sugar, or something called ketones. And ketones are not fat, they're not protein, they're not carbs. There's something made in the liver. They are a direct fuel for the brain. And actually, brain cells prefer ketones. And ketones are made from a type of fat, which is called C8 or carbonate. It's part of a group of fats called medium-chain triglycerides or MCTs. For example, coconut oil has 7% of this C8 oil. But you can now buy C8 oil. I've been purifying the C8 out of coconut. It's called Keto Fast. But in one study, two studies now in Canada, they gave people who had cognitive decline 2 tablespoons of this C8 oil, and they measured a 230% increased energy production in the brain from ketones, which is what the liver makes as the fuel for the brain from the C8 oil. Now, and that improved cognition. So in other words, part of that, you know, I can't concentrate, my memory's not working so well, is a sort of mental fatigue thing, possibly to do with, if you like, fuel starvation, because the sugar engine is all messed up. So this is something that really can help people pretty immediately. I mean, you would experience an effect certainly within a week of adding a couple of tablespoons of C8 oil. So I think for people who do have cognitive dysfunction at some level, that could really make a big difference, at least in the short to medium term. We don't know the long-term effects.
Well, it's been a great honor to speak to you this week on UK Health Radio on preventing Alzheimer's. For anybody that wants more information and wants to take that cognitive test and join your app, I believe they can find out more about you on the website, which is foodforthebrain.org. Is that correct?
That's it. It's all there. And do become a friend of Food for the Brain. We really need your support. We want you to join our citizen science group.
It's very cheap to change your life these days. £50 for the year, is that right?
That's correct, yes.
I mean, can imagine that, £50 to change your life and prevent Alzheimer's. It's a bargain. Hopefully, we'll have you on the show again in the future, Patrick. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Dora. Stay well.